a certain person, has a certain doubt in Mishpat, bein dom le dom, bein din le din, bein ega le ega, concerning any matter of Torah, in Pasuk Chet, at Chapter Zayin, 17:8. So what do you do?
Vekamto ve'oliso el hamokom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo. So you shall go to the Beis Hamikdash. Why the Beis Hamikdash? Because this is where the Sanhedrin is. Uvoso el hakoyanim alvim ve'lashofet asher yivchar yomim moed. Ve'dorashto ve'yigidu lecho esder hamishpat. Only they can tell you what the halacha is. But once they tell you, ve'osiso al pi hadovar asher yagidu lecho. Once they tell you the law, you are obligated to follow it. As long as it's the Sanhedrin telling you this. Now you must follow everything they tell you. You're not allowed to turn away from what the rabbis tell you, right or left.
From the very same, right?
From Sanhedrin.
Another rabbi.
What?
Another rabbi, no? What the Sanhedrin
says. What the Sanhedrin says? In other words, you must listen to the Sanhedrin. So, the Rambam says that this is the isur of transgressing any dinei derabbanan. In other words, what is the right, what is the power that the Rabbanon have to legislate laws, right? Let's say they say you must read the Megillah, or you must not eat meat and and drink milk after you ate meat. So, Isur de Rabbanon. What's their power? Why should we listen to them? Says the Rambam, because of Loi Sosur. Loi Sosur min adovar asher yagidu lecho. From that we learn out that the Rabbonon has the power of the Torah itself. That's what the Rambam says. Asks the Ramban, right there in Sefer HaMitzvot, says like this. If it's true what the Rambam says, that the basis, the power that the rabbis have to legislate laws is from this pasuk, Loi Sosur, if so, why does it say in the Gemara, Sofek de Oraiso lechumro? Right. If you have a sofek on a biblical law, then you take the strict position. But sofek de rabbonon lekulo. Right? Why sofek de rabbonon lekulo? After all, if according to the Rambam, every de rabbonon is a de oraise, every rabbinical law is really a transgression of the biblical law. If so, why is it that if you have a doubt on a rabbinical law, you do not have to take the strict position? Why not? If it's a biblical law in its basis. Therefore, says the Ramban, we must say that the Rabbonon is just at the Rabbonon and at the Rais is at the Rais. Now, he argues with the Rambam. He does not believe, he does not hold that a Isur de Rabbonon is actually a Isur de Rais. So that's the Ramban's position and that's the Rambam's position. But it's interesting, in the Sefer Shar Yosha, Rav Shimon Shkop, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva of the last generation, he asked the following question, according to the Ramban. Right? It says like this. Fine, so the Ramban rejected the Rambam's position. But why didn't it bother him, the Ramban himself, if you can't learn out from here that you must listen to the rabbis? So why do you have to listen to the rabbis? What is the obligation to listen to the rabbis? So what do you have to answer? Because the rabbis say so. So who says that I have to listen to them? You know Shimon's question?
Is that question further enforced by the fact that we don't have smicha the same way today?
Well, no. Of course, we are not talking about today. But what about the Sanhedrin that decided that you're not allowed to touch mukse? Right. A certain rabbinical court decided, don't touch mukse. What right do they have to say it? Why do I have to listen to them? Why? You can say because God said so. Right? Because the Ramban's position is that if God said so, then every rabbinical law becomes a biblical law, and we find from the Gemara that it's not so. So if so, right, the paradox is, so if God didn't say so, why should I listen to the rabbis?
According to the Ramban.
According to the Ramban, of course. According to the Ramban.
Yeah.
But according to the Ramban, why do you have to listen to the Rabbanan? So, in this Sefer, says Rabbi Shimon Shkop the following. He says like this. From here we can derive the following conclusion, he says. That something that your seichel tells you, something that your intelligence tells you, is as obligatory as a Torah law. You hear? Seichel mechayev kedivrei Torah atzman. Whatever your seichel tells you, if you decide that this is the right way, then you are as obligated to do it as if the Torah would tell you. And what's the proof? Incredible proof. It says like this. The Rambam says it in the Yad HaZokeh, he says it. Can a Gentile, a Goy, can he justify, for instance, any one of the transgressions of the seven commandments, right? Killing, stealing, by saying, I didn't know that you're not allowed to. Now, is there such a thing as saying, Lo yodati, I don't know, lack of knowledge of the law as a justification for Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach?
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
What?
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
That's a secular problem. By us, it is. And it was by us, according to the Jewish laws, if someone is a Tinok Shenishba Leveno Akum, let's say, a child who was kidnapped by Gentiles and raised as a Gentile and never knew better, that is a justification for the transgression of all Jewish laws. But a Ben Noach, in other words, the seven commandments of Bnei Noach, he can't say, I didn't know, you should have known better. And the Gemara says so. Hoyo loy little mind? He's supposed to say, you didn't know? Why didn't you go and study? So the question is, what do you mean, why didn't you go and study? That's what the Gemara says. Hoyo loy lilmoid veloy lomad. You should have gone out and found out that you're not allowed to steal or kill. How do I know that there is something to find out? So from here we can derive that naturally, intuitively, there are certain things that your mind tells you, or your intelligence tells you. And if you didn't even follow the advice of your intuition to find out, maybe there is a point to not killing, meaning we believe that there is no human being in the world that for a certain, that the thought didn't cross his mind, maybe it's wrong to steal, maybe it's wrong to kill. The moment the thought crosses your mind, you have the obligation to follow it. The obligation based on what? Seichel, intelligence. So what do we see from here? You see that Seichel is mechayev to the point that you can give the Gentile the death penalty based on that. How can you give him the death penalty? You can only give the death penalty to someone who has an obligation. What obligated him? Nobody taught him. So you see that Seichel is mechayev. So he says the same thing is with the rabbis. Obviously, even if you don't take what the Torah says as an obligation, but the Torah says they know best, right? Go to them because they know best. So let's say you don't count it as an obligation. But once they know best, doesn't Seichel tell you to listen to them? That is what obligates you to listen to the rabbi. Seichel obligates you to listen to rabbis. This is what Rav Shimon says. Now, the next parsha is the Parshas HaMelech, a very difficult parsha in Pasuk Yudalet. Ki sovoi el ho'oretz asher Hashem Elokecho nosen lo. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, v'yirishto v'yoshavto bo, and you'll settle in it, v'omarto, and you will say, osimo olai melech kechol hagoyim asher svivoysai, and you will say, I will let's appoint a king like all the nations around me, soimto simo lecho melech. At that point, you should appoint a king, asher yivcha Hashem Elokecho bo, except that it has to be the king that's chosen by God. So now, the question is the following. If it's a mitzvah to appoint a king, why does the Torah put it in such a way? Why does the Torah put it? When you come to Eretz Israel, and you will say, let's appoint a king, soim tosim olecho melech, appoint a king. If the mitzvah is to appoint a king, how come the Torah introduces the mitzvah with a statement, ve'omarto, and you will say, let's appoint a king? What's the idea? Just say straight, appoint a king. Okay? That's one question which is asked. And we'll put it together with another question that in Sefer Shmuel, it says like this. Shmuel is the last one of the Shoftim. He's the last one of the Shoftim.
at the end of his days, Vayikasher Zoken Shmuel, I'm reading here from chapter 8 of Shmuel, Vayoshem is Bonov Shoifting Lishur. Really, people say Shmuel is the last Shoifet. In reality, the sons of Shmuel were the last Shoifting. Because he appointed in his lifetime the sons as Shoifting. But the people rejected them. They didn't accept them. So, Vaiskatsu kol Ziknei Israel, so the elders, Ziknei Israel, always when it says Ziknei, it means the Chachomim, the sages. Vayovoyo el Shmuel el Romoso, and they told him, Hinei atozo kanto, and your children don't follow your ways. Atosimo lonu melech leshofteinu kechol agoyim. Let's appoint a king that he should judge us like all other nations. Vayeira hadovor beinei Shmuel. And Shmuel disliked, he saw it as something very bad, what they asked, that they asked for a king. Kasher omru tno lonu melech leshofteinu. And he turned to God, and God answers him, don't worry, it's not you that they are rejecting. Ki loy oishcho moasu, ki oisi moasu mim loy chaleyeh. They are rejecting me as the king by asking for a king. Okay. Says the Malbe. Hameforshim nevucho. They are perplexed. All the commentaries, he says. Madua ra dovor b'nei Shmuel. V'nei Hashem, what's wrong with asking for a king? V'aloi hakosu voimer. And he quotes our posuk. Ki sovoi elo ores v'rishto v'yoshavto bo v'omarto. Osim olai melech kechol agoyim. The Torah tells you. That, what?
It's a mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah, so... what's wrong with a mitzvah? The Torah itself tells you. So, what's pshat? So what's going on exactly? So, the Malbim himself answers that there is one basic difference between the way the Torah says how a king should be asked, how they should ask for a king, and how they asked. They both say, Kechol Hagoyim. That's interesting. In the Torah also, the men that the Torah calls Ve'omarto, and you will say, whoever the you is, the Jewish people, you will say, Osim Olai Melech Kechol Hagoyim. Here also he says Kechol Hagoyim, except points out the Malbim, that in Sefer Shmuel the word used, Leshofteinu Kechol Hagoyim, that he should judge us like all other nations. That is a corruption of the idea of monarchy in Israel, he says. Why? Because the job of the king is not to be a judge, meaning he has the executive powers in the government, not the legislative powers or the judicial powers. There is a completely separation of powers, says the Malbim. Therefore, what was wrong is that they asked for Leshofteinu Kechol Hagoyim. In other words, let's establish a monarchy that goes beyond the Torah monarchy. Absolute monarchy is something that the Goyim have. We shouldn't do things just because the Goyim do. We should do things, even if the incentive is because the Goyim have it, but we should do it in a Jewish way, not in a Gentile way. By saying the words Leshofteinu, they are adding they are giving a certain power to the monarchy that according to the Torah law it doesn't have. Right, so there's no question about it that it's a correct observation. They do add this. But we find in Sforim for instance, concerning the law of Yovel. It says like this. If Yovel will come, right, and listen to what happens. You can't plant on the 49th year, because the 49th year is Shmita. And you can't plant in Yovel. And you are going to say, how will I have food for 3 years? Right? Because on the 51st year, you're just planting, so you're not going to have food. So what will give me food for 3 years? Venosati esabrocho. Then I'll give my blessing that you should have food. So I saw in many Mefarshim, they point out, they say, if God wanted to give a blessing, right, because you are keeping Shemitah and you're keeping Yovel, why does the Torah have to say, if you will say, what am I going to eat, I'm going to give you a blessing. Let the Torah say straight, I'm going to give you a blessing. So he says like this. In reality, he says, the fact that you are asking, what am I going to eat, is wrong. Really, if the Torah says that you should keep Shemitah and you should keep Yovel, you shouldn't even ask, what am I going to eat? If that's what the Torah was, of course I'm going to do it without questions. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, if you are at that level that you don't even ask questions, you don't even need a blessing. Now, what is a blessing? A blessing is going beyond the deen. For instance, someone is ill, right? So you go to someone for a blessing. In other words, that someone should break the midas ha-deen, the judgment, right? The strict judgment, in order to add a midas ha-rachamim, that after all, even though I may deserve to be ill, but God, please, become merciful. In other words, I need the brocha when the natural law or the natural will of God would be otherwise. Okay? So it says like this. If we keep Shemitah and Yovel and we ask no questions because this is the will of God, we don't need a blessing. Nature will provide for our needs without the blessing. In other words, it will be built into nature to give us whatever you need. Because of course, if Hashem says keep the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, Hashem provides in nature that you shouldn't starve. So it's built into nature. So is it necessary to give a blessing? You don't need a blessing. When do you need a blessing? When you ask questions. When you ask questions, okay, God said so, I'm going to do it. But what am I going to eat? At that moment, there is a lack of bitochon. That lack of bitochon makes it. That nature will not be loyal to you anymore. So therefore, Hashem has to go out of his way and give a blessing. That's what the Mefarshim said. In other words, in a perfect world where we fulfill the will of God without asking questions, nature will provide our wishes without asking questions. In other words, we won't have to do anything to nature to be loyal to us. You know that in a perfect world where we do whatever we are supposed to do, nature does to us whatever nature is supposed to do. Where does it say that? Of course, in the second portion of Kriya Shema. Ve'hoyom shomoyat ishmol mitzvoisai. If you listen to my commandments, then nature will give you rain at the same in the right time. You'll have plenty of food in it. Nature is as loyal to us as we are loyal to God. The more imperfect our loyalty to Hashem, the more imperfect nature's loyalty to us. Right? This comes, of course, from Odom HaRishon. When does nature start sprouting out thorns? After the Chet of Eitz Hadas. Before the Chet of Eitz Hadas, nature is perfectly loyal to Odom. Because Odom was perfectly loyal to Hashem. After the Chet of Eitz Hadas, Odom ceases to be loyal to Hashem, nature ceases to be loyal to us. That's how it is. Now, nature's relationship to us reflects our relationship to Hashem. Without a question, nature doesn't need a blessing. With a question, nature needs a blessing. What do we see from here? That the asking, right, expresses a certain flaw in Klal Yisrael, right? It represents a certain flaw in Klal Yisrael. So it says like this. You know that there is an apparent contradiction in two blessings in Shmoyin Esrei. We say like this. Remember the Hoshivo Shefteinu, we say Hoshivo Shefteinu, we shouldn't say anything about the law, Vosim Yeranocho. Umloicho leinu ato Hashem lebadcho. Right? In other words, why are we adding Umloicho leinu ato Hashem lebadcho when we are asking for Hoshivo Shefteinu kevori shoino? Say the Mefarshim an incredible statement. They say like this. Because we are asking for Shoiftim. Let's go back to the period of the Shoiftim. Hoshivo Shoiftinu kevori shoino. Learn many Mefarshim is a hint to the period of the Shoftim. There were no kings when there were Shoftim. Right? So who was the king? Hashem himself. In other words, appointing a king is a contradiction to the kingdom of Hashem. So therefore, Hoshivo Shoiftinu kevori shoino, and not a king. So Mloicho leinu ato Hashem levadcho. We finish that broche. A few broches later, we say like this. All of a sudden, we're asking for kingdom. We're asking for David HaMelech. Isn't that a contradiction? So it says like this. No, it's not a contradiction at all. Why? Because Malchus Beis David has a special task in Klal Yisrael. That even though it came out through monarchy, right? But essentially monarchy was just a method for David HaMelech, meaning the real job of David HaMelech is the Messiah, the redemption of Klal Yisrael. It came out that it was necessary that it should take the shape of a king, but his job is the Redeemer. Right? Now, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim, what does it mean? That the redemption of Klal Yisrael is a reality now. Right? With a king or without a king. If it has to take the shape of a king, it will take the shape of a king. But it's not that David is Malchus because David is a Melech. David is a redeemer, but in order to be a redeemer, at the time, Malchus is required. Do you follow the difference? In other words, the Malchus of Beis David is basically, intrinsically different than the Malchus of Israel, of the Yerovam ben Nevot. Right? There it was really Malchus. By David HaMelech, the Malchus was something secondary to his main nature, which is a redeemer. Okay, in other words, the job of David is a redeemer that happens to come out through Malchus. If so, it's no contradiction at all, which means like this. Malchus, for its own sake, we don't want, it's wrong. Because Klal Yisrael doesn't need a king. Because when you have a king, you concentrate the relationship to one person when really that relationship should be transferred to Hashem himself. That's what we mean. The job of the Shoftim, that what, by the way, you know that the translation of Shoftim means judges, is wrong. Is wrong. Of course, it doesn't mean judges. Even though part of their job was to be a judge, their main job was to be a decision maker. A Shoftim is a decision maker. Of course, a judge is a decision maker. But the word Shofet means a decision maker. Otherwise, how do you understand that they were attacked by the Moabites, so they appointed such and such as the Shofet? Why, they need a judge when they are attacked by somebody? They need a decision maker. The word Shofet means a decision maker. A judge happens to... The name Shofet fits by a judge, because a judge is also a decision maker. So, when we translate the Sefer Shoftim as the book of judges, of course it's wrong. It's not the book of judges, but it's the book of the decision makers. So now, why wasn't there a king in the first period of the history of Klal Yisrael? Because kingdom, if it doesn't come in the form of Malchus Beis David, which is the only form where kingdom doesn't contradict the Malchus Hashem, it's only Bidiyevet. It's not ideal at all. Now, something which is Bidiyevet, are we allowed to do it? Well, yes, sometimes. Sometimes the situation is such that we can't help it. Klal Yisrael comes to such a level where he can't survive without the king. For instance, it says, the recurring statement in Sefer Shoftim is the following. Ube'eis azois ein melech b'Yisrael. Ish ha'yosher be'einov yase. Every person does whatever is right in his eyes. Is that good or bad? What?
It's good.
It's good and it's bad. In other words, when there is no king, you can reach the lowest level because there is nobody to hold you to a certain level. So therefore, that statement appears by Pileges Begibo that happened in the times of the Shoftim, or the Pesel Micho that happens at the times of the Shoftim, without going into the details, but terrible things happen at times of the Shoftim, and the Novi says, because Ein Melech B'Yisrael. So then, it's bad not to have a king. On the other hand, we find that in a Medrash it's called like this, Sefer HaYosher, Hu Sefer Shoftim. Why? Shenemar Ish HaYosher Bein of Yaseh. That's the name of the book. Of course, if it would be bad, we wouldn't call the name of the book Yosher. Obviously, Ish HaYosher Bein of Yaseh means that the highest potential that a person can reach is when he's not bound by the control of the king. Okay, so it's the best of times and it's the worst of times, right? Obviously, the potential of greatness of the times of the Shoftim, it's much more than in the time of the Melochim, because by the time of the Melochim, there was too much control. Of course, they would have never gone to such a depth of evil as they came in the times of the Shoftim with Pesel, Micho, and Pileges Begibo, because a king can hold back the corruption. But the potential of greatness is also missing. This is why, ideally, we should revert to the period of the Shoftim, where there is no kingdom, umloi cholein, atu Hashem levadcho.
Yeah.
If I understand you right, the typical Malchus, not the base Dalit Malchus, the purpose of the Malchus was sort of to make sure that the Sanhedrin could function, right? I mean, it was like an external arm that could prevent external enemies from upsetting the system, and
sure.
But also could take action that was beyond the limits of Jewish law. In other words, somebody they know is a murderer, but the Sanhedrin didn't have aid, so maybe in other words,
certain flaws in the system can be overcome by kingdom, by monarchy.
Right.
But it's only when the flaws exist. In other words, in a society which is more or less perfect, you don't need a king.
Right.
Right? A king reflects a flaw in society. The need for kingdom reflects a flaw in society.
What about the external enemies, though? What about, you know...
Fine, that's also something. So, for that, we don't need a king. Take a look at the Sefer Shoftim, and they were attacked, so now we appoint out a chief. Why do you need to keep them during the 40 years of peace? So we fire him. Who needs him, for instance? We don't need a king just because of the attacks of the enemies. At the time when we are going to be attacked, that's when we need somebody to lead us in war. Okay? So, say the Mephoshim like this. If the Torah would have come and said, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, appoint a king, right? Then we would have misunderstood the whole Parsha of Malchus. We would have thought that the Torah actually sees kingdom as something positive in itself. And that's not true at all. How does the Torah express the idea that Malchus is something bidiyevet? What is bidiyevet? If we reach a point that we come down in our spiritual level, very, very much, it comes a point where we are better off with a king than without a king. It's bad, because if we need a king, that's a proof that we are very, very bad. But there is such a point that if we need him, you better appoint him. Okay? How does the Torah express it? The same way the Torah expressed it by Yovel. Once you ask, that's a reflection that something is wrong with you. When you say, Ve'omarto, Osimo olai melech kechol agoyim asher svevo isai, at that point, if you are asking for it, you may be needing it already, and that's very, very bad. But if you need it, appoint him. In other words, the Torah itself is writing into the Parsha that kingdom is only bidiyevet. Kingdom contradicts the spirit of the Torah. This is why Klal Yisrael in the beginning didn't have Malchus. And this is the reason why when Shmuel hears, the Jews are asking for a king. So it actually happened. They actually came down to such a point. After all the efforts I put into Klal Yisrael, says Shmuel, look what they are doing. They are asking for a king. Obviously, once they are asking, we have to appoint him. But I wish they wouldn't have asked. Because if they wouldn't have asked, that would have meant that they are still in a higher level. So this is what it means. That's why there's no contradiction at all. And that's why the Torah puts it in such a way. First you ask. Once you ask, then we know that you are at such a level that Son Toshim Olecho Mehra. But when you can avoid it as long as possible. This is the pshat in the why Shmuel was so upset when the situation actually came about. Now, it says like this in the same parsha of Melech Posuk Tezayet, Rak lo yarbe lo yisusin velo yosheve so'om mitzraimo. Two commandments, two special restrictions the king has not to have too many horses. Why? Not to return the Jews to Egypt. Why? Because horses came from Egypt at that time. That's how the situation was. If you need a lot of horses, then you'll have to set up a whole business representative agency in Egypt, right? So a certain group of people have to go down there in order to import their horses, and they'll bring down their friends and relatives, and then you're going to have a whole community in Egypt. And that's what Hashem doesn't want. Hashem doesn't want that you should establish a Jewish community in Egypt, right? V'lo yoshev esom mitzrayimo leman har boishus v'Hashem omar lochem lo yisosifun l'shu b'derech hazeh oy. Okay. Second commandment. V'lo yar v'lo yinoshim, let him not have too many wives. Why? V'lo yosur levovoy, because if you have too many wives, eventually they'll turn your heart away from God, right? And that's very dangerous, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Shlomo HaMelech said like this to himself. Since the Torah tells me the reason for the two laws, therefore, I will not keep the laws because they are not right to me, he said. Right? Ani arbe, I will add to my horses, velo yoshuv, and nobody will transgress the law because of me. Same thing he said about wives. It's true. You're not allowed to have more than a certain amount of wives. 18. Ani arbe, I will add to my wives, velo yoshuv, but I won't turn my heart because I know myself. That doesn't apply to me. Okay? And in both, he was wrong. Eventually it says that a community was established in Mitzrayim. A lot of Jews did return to Mitzrayim because of the horse trading. Right? That's what it says. And eventually at the end of his life, his wives did turn his heart. Chassid doesn't mean that he himself became an idol worshiper, Chassid Sholem. But it means that a lot of the foreign gods, right, were established in Eretz Yisrael with temples and other forms of worship. Right? So if so, Shlomo HaMelech was wrong in both counts. Question is, why is it? What does it mean? What was the mistake that Shlomo HaMelech made? Right? What was really the mistake? What is the nature of that mistake of thinking? If the Torah says a reason, obviously it doesn't apply if the reason doesn't apply. Why should he assume that? So, I saw in one of the Mefarshim something very interesting. He says like this. You know that we find that the word used for reasons for mitzvos, for instance, when the Rambam talks about reasons for mitzvos, he calls it tamei ha-mitzvos. Tamei ha-mitzvos. The word ta'am has a double meaning in Hebrew. It means reason. Mahatam, my taimo, like the Gemara asks. My taimo means what is the reason. And it also means taste. He says, no, it's no coincidence that taste and reason are very closely connected. Why? Because we can use taste as an analogy to reason. What does it mean? Let's say, for instance, some food, bread, has taste. The apple has taste. Right? Now, is the taste essential to the apple or is it secondary to the apple? What does it mean? For instance, God gave us put into the apple certain minerals and vitamins and whatever other things that apple has. The taste of the apple, is it essential? What about if an apple would have no taste? It would still be as healthy for us as with a taste. So why did Hashem put taste into the apple? For no other reason but to make it palatable to us. That's why now it should make something which is good for us anyway more palatable. That's why Hashem added the taste. But obviously, with or without the taste, the apple is the same for us. Okay? Same thing is for Tamei HaMitzvos. For instance, let's say, for instance, Shabbos. What is the reason for Shabbos? Because it's very good for our mentally that we should relax once a week. That's what we're going to say, the reason for the mitzvah. You should relax once a week. It's very good mentally for us. Is that a reason? It definitely is one of the Tamei HaMitzvos. Why not? But what is the difference whether the reason is essential to the mitzvah or it's secondary to the mitzvah? What will happen in a case where the reason will tell you not to keep Shabbos? For instance, you are stuck in the middle of the desert and it's time for the beginning of Shabbos. And all you have to do is just climb on the helicopter, right? And all you have to do is transgress the Shabbos for 10 minutes. And you are going to go into the city, and they'll take you into the shul, and you'll be invited to eat the most delicious meals. You'll have a wonderful Shabbos, a Shabbos with a taste of Shabbos. Or you can stay in the middle of the desert. You won't have anything to eat, right? You'll hate every second of it. It will be the longest Shabbos in your life, right? You won't have any food. You'll hate it. You'll simply hate it. Obviously, if we are just following the reasons for mitzvahs, the tamei mitzvahs, so what should you do? Obviously, go on the helicopter, transgress the Shabbos for 10 minutes, so for the rest of the Shabbos, you can have a wonderful Shabbos. What does the Torah tell you to do? Better have a miserable Shabbos, right? But keep the Shabbos, then have a wonderful Shabbos, and transgress the Shabbos for 5 minutes. Why was the idea? If we are going to say that the tamei mitzvah, the Tam HaMitzvah is essential to the mitzvah. So obviously you would be allowed to do it. But we believe that the tam is only secondary to the mitzvah itself. Okay? So therefore it says like this. By the melech, right, when he was given the reason, the mistake that Shlomo HaMelech made was that the tam is the essence of the mitzvah. So if the tam is the essence of the mitzvah, so really he's not talking to me because the reason doesn't apply to me. What was the lesson? The lesson was that even the tam that the Torah writes is something secondary to the mitzvah. It's only like a taste. It's like the taste added to the apple. That was just added by the Torah to make it more palatable. It should be easier to eat the apple. Just imagine if we would have to eat food and they would have no taste. We would still have to eat it. But it would be an enormous effort. Once Hashem added taste, it's easier. Right? So this is what happens with the mitzvahs. Hashem says, don't marry too many wives. Right? The reason is completely secondary. That's what Shlomo HaMelech made a mistake. He actually thought that the reason is an essential part of the mitzvah itself. Now, there's another very interesting law by the king, and this is in Pasuk 18, once he's established on the throne, the Chosaf Loi es Mishneh HaToyro Hazois. Says Rashi, what does mean Mishneh HaTorah? It does mean what Mishneh Torah means. Usually, it means a second copy of the Torah. That's what Rashi says. That he has to make a second copy of the Torah. Every Jew has to have one copy of the Torah. It doesn't mean, actually, that you have to own it, but there is a mitzvah Ksiva Sefer Torah. But the Melech has to have a second Sefer Torah. So the question is, can you be any more intelligent by learning from two Sefer Torah than from one? I mean, does a second Sefer Torah teach you more than one Sefer Torah? Are you a bigger Talmud Chochem if you have two Sefer Torah than one? Answers Rashi. So Rashi says, you know why he needs two? Shtei Sefer Torahs. Acha shehi munachat beveis gnozov. Because one he has to put away in the beis gnozov, means the hidden chambers. The achas, and the second one, shenichneses v'yotzeisimoy. He needs one in public and one in private. So again, say the Meforshim. How did Rashi answer the question? So why do you need two? Why can't you use the same Sefer Torah in private as he uses in public? Okay? So the Meforshim say the following. You know that usually, the Gemara says like this, that it's a very important quality by a human being, it should be toichoi keboroi, which means your inner feelings should fit with your outer behavior. Toichoi keboroi. That is, to try to get away from hypocrisy. There is only one exception to this rule. That there is a one situation where the Torah says clearly, your behavior in public has to be one, and in private it has to be completely the opposite. And this by a king. In public he's supposed to show signs of superiority, right? He has to act in a certain way to show that he's superior to everybody else. And in private it says, Levilti roim levovo, he's room levovo, he's not allowed to feel superior. So it's a terrible problem. Deep inside he's supposed to maintain his modesty, and on the surface he's not allowed to show any signs of modesty. And if he's not able to keep both personalities perfectly balanced, he loses the malchus. It says that Shmuel HaNovi told Shaul HaMelech, why did Shaul HaMelech lose his kingdom? Because he wasn't able to keep the natural modesty of his personality from showing in public. He couldn't do it. He wasn't able to balance both personalities. Therefore he lost the malchus, because when it came time when he had to show the superiority over the nation, he gave in to the nation, he was too modest. That was the flaw of Shaul HaMelech. Comes out according to this, that the nature of the king is to maintain two different personalities. How is this expressed? You know, it's like all the mitzvahs in the Torah, the mitzvahs represent signs of a certain mode of behavior. How? This is the way the Torah commands the king to remind himself that he actually needs two Shulchan Aruchs. He needs two Sifrei Torah. One, Beveis Gnozov, in private. In private, he has a different Torah than in public. In private, the Torah tells him, be modest. Who do you think you are? You're a nobody. Right? What do you think? That they are special, that you are king? And in public, what does the same Torah tell him? You are great. You are unique. You are powerful. You, whatever you say goes. It's two different Sefer Torah. He has to develop two parallel personalities that actually are contradictory to each other. This is the symbolism of the two Sefer Torah. This is what Rashi means. One has to be kept beveis gnozo. Beveis gnozo means in his hidden chambers, where nobody sees you, when you have to develop your real personality. And one, shenichnas v'yoytzeimoy, in public. In public, you're supposed to show a completely different personality. Unless you can keep the balance of both Torahs, you can't keep your kingdom. And that's really the flaw of Sholem Melech. Okay, we'll stop here. Before Hashem says, when you're coming towards Israel, what you're going to find is magicians and with all kinds of, that do all kinds of witchcraft, but you are not allowed to do that because you, in Pasuk Tesvov, Novi Mikir Becho, Meachecho Komoni Yokim Lecho Hashem Elokecho. You have, you'll have a Hashem will send you a Novi Mekir Becho from amongst you, Mei Achecho from your brothers, Komoni. Now, what does the Komoni mean, like me, that Moshe Rabbeinu says, like me? So the simple pshat, of course, is that, like I am a Novi, so that's what, he has to be a Novi. The Meshe Chochmo learns, Komoni comes to teach me the following halacha. It says here, Eilov Tishmeun, you shall listen to him, right? You shall listen to him. Included in this halacha to listen to him is even when the Novi tells you to do something that goes against the Torah, right? Because that's how the Rambam puts it. If a Novi comes and tells you, do something, for instance, from now on there is no more tefillin, you don't have to put on tefillin, don't listen to him. Not only don't you listen to him, but bring him to court and he's chayav miset. Because obviously Hashem will not change his mind from any of the laws of the Torah. But what about if the Novi will come and tell you, for the next 100 years, don't put on tefillin? Do you have to listen to him? Yeah, you have to listen to him. It's an obligation, and that's included. Right.
He even didn't give a reason why.
Okay, alright, maybe we'll talk a little bit about it. But, you know, once you decide that he is a Novi, right, and he's a reliable Novi, and he's a Leoa Novi, and he tells you, even though there is a halacha that you are not allowed to bring sacrifices outside of the Beis Hamikdash, for this time we are allowed to do it. We should go to Mount Carmel and bring korbanos. So if he would have said, from now on the halacha doesn't apply, you wouldn't listen to him. But now that he says, for this time, and Elio is a reliable prophet, then you must listen to him, Elof Tishmon. Except if he tells you, Chazvish, if he tells you, from now on you don't have to believe in Hashem anymore. Or if he tells you, temporarily you don't have to believe in Hashem, or temporarily you have to worship idols. That, even if it's temporary, and the Novi tells you, he's Chayav Mise, the Novi's Chayav Mise, even though up to this point he was a reliable Novi. Says the Mishnah. This is the Halokhe, right? Says the Meshe Chochmo. That is hinted in Komoini. Why? Because Klal Yisrael hid a message from Hashem in two ways. A direct message from Hashem without Moshe as an intermediary. And then they hid other messages from Hashem through Moshe as an intermediary. What was the message that they received from Hashem without Moshe as an intermediary? The first two commandments. What are the first two commandments? Onochi velo yelecho. Comes out that onochi velo yelecho is not included in the halacha of Eilof Tishmeun. So that's why it says komoini, only those things that I said it to you. Those things, if a Novi said, says the Meshe Chochmo, then you listen to him even though it goes against the Torah temporarily. But if it's something like, not komoini, something that you didn't listen from me, but you listen directly from Hashem, so even if it's temporary, don't listen to it. This is how the Meshe Chochmo learns the word komoini. father. What does the word me'achecho mean? Says the Midrash. Me'achecho, but not, if it's not me'achecho. In other words, if a goy comes